All right, before we get to Will Graves from the Associated Press, Nate in Deep Creek joins us here on 93.7 The Fan. Hello, Nate.
Hey, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Number one, I think Aaron Rodgers is a master chess player. He's out there dissecting the defenses, putting in the best play that we can have. So I think he's doing a great job doing that. And while he's doing that, he's teaching the younger players how to assess defenses, how to come along those reads and to do the right thing. And he's holding people accountable, which is amazing for the Steelers team.
That's the one. And the other stuff is great. The accountability, Nate, I'm with you. And that's something that's been lacking in that room.
And I agree. And what I think it's doing is it's actually changing Mike Tomlin as well. I think Mike Tomlin is now going for it on fourth downs where he would just punt the ball away or do other things, where now he has some more leeway to do the right things in the football mind.
Yeah, I like those thoughts. Thank you, Nate. Let's go to Will Graves from the Associated Press. And, Will, I'm going to jump right in on that. Do you think Aaron Rodgers is changing at all, even slightly, Mike Tomlin?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think Mike's pretty set in his ways, but I think that Mike be leaning more into his "we're not going to live in our fears" at this point. I mean, I think when you look at the way that the things are trending across the league, I mean, everybody's kind of going for it now all the time in different ways. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, going forward on fourth and one with the Pittsburgh plunge or whatever we're calling it is as risky as what you see like the Lions doing, you know, what the Chargers do on a weekly basis. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think Mike's being a little more risky, but I mean, in my opinion, he's not sort of, I wouldn't say what he's doing is sort of wildly out of character. I would say it's more like, well, what we need, like, what, 6 inches? Connor, go in there, have Darnell push you 6 inches, and we get a first down.
We're joined by Will Graves from the Associated Press. Hello, Will.
Hi, Jeff.
Thank you for taking time. We appreciate it. It's been, you know, what, 10 hours since I've seen you last.
Yes, I know.
Do you believe that the Steelers are, I don't know what the word, maybe I'll leave that to you. What are they in the AFC?
You know what? They sort of are who we thought they were. I mean, this is what they do. I was talking to somebody else a little while ago, and, you know, look, it's, and I wrote about this today. I mean, it's mid-December, and where are the Steelers? They're in the mix under Mike Tomlin. Do I think they're a threat if they can find a way into the playoffs? I think I feel a little bit better now than I did, obviously, than anybody did a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I think what we saw last night from the end of the first half through the beginning of the fourth quarter was the best 25-ish minutes of, you know, football they've played all season by a pretty wide margin. I mean, yes, I know it's on Monday night at home when they always win. And yes, I know it's the Dolphins and Tua's terrible or whatever. But, I mean, they hadn't looked that competent on both sides of the ball for a long time. And let's be honest, the AFC, you're not going to, you know, if they can get in, that means Lamar's not going to get in, right?
Right.
Okay, well, there's one. Mahomes is already out. If the Bills don't win the division, they won't, you know, maybe they have the Bills in the first round. I mean, that first wild card spot is going to be a very interesting group. But, I mean, if Aaron Rodgers can play like he played last night, decisive, quick throws, and then, like, look, we can also – DK's touchdown was great. I mean, the run after the catch, the sunning of Minka Fitzpatrick, like, that was great, but that was also a pretty great throw. If he can do that and the defense can kind of just be okay, I think they have a puncher's chance. Do I like them to go to the Super Bowl? No, but I certainly think they look like they might be getting better, which – it was hard to imagine us saying even a couple of weeks ago.
Is there a team, if Aaron plays near or at what he played last night, that the Steelers can't beat in the AFC?
You know what? I mean, Buffalo is still You know, Buffalo, they have the guy. I mean, we could all the talk about, you know, who the MVP is. For a while, it was Baker, and then it's like, hey, maybe it's going to be Drake May, or hey, maybe it's going to be Matthew Stafford, blah, blah, blah. Josh Allen is the best player and the most valuable player in football. Like, and it's not even close. We've seen that the last 3 weeks. What he did here, what he did against the Bengals, what he did on Sunday leading the Bills back. I wouldn't like that matchup. But against everybody else, I mean, you're going to have young guys. You're going to have, you know, maybe you'll have a Drake May in his first real playoff test, Bo Nix in his first real playoff test, DJ Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert, but he's, you know, he looks only sort of healthy right now, right? So, like, none of these guys have the pedigree that Aaron Rodgers has. To be fair, very few people, you know, in the history of the game have his pedigree. But you'd have to like their options. You know, their chances in those kinds of matchups. And anybody outside of Allen and the Bills, I think they have a puncher's chance. Hey, let's remember, they already beat the Patriots. I mean, that game was fluky, to be very clear. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers is not going to be nervous in the playoffs. I mean, if the Steelers get in, they're not going to be nervous because I think they're sort of playing with house money. You know, if they get in and win the division with a home game, I think that that will, you know, maybe better than – it's certainly better than I thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. So, you know, it's not boring. I mean, I don't know if they're good, Jeff, and I don't know, I don't think they're that good. They're not bad. They're sort of where they've been, but, like, this is how they live, man. This is, you know, what Mike T says, December football, and, like, they have a – they're in it. And Steeler fans can complain and want, you know, talk about change, and I get that. And look, Mike T's not going to coach here for the next 100 years. There's going to be a change at some point.
I don't believe you.
and maybe nor should you. I don't know. It was very interesting last night to get Ben to basically, like, walk back what he said on his own podcast. And that was only 2 weeks ago.
Oh, we're going
to
get into that quickly, coming up here.
That's how quickly fortunes change in this business. But, you know, you have to – I mean, look, I heard you – you know, you were talking to Ray earlier. You know, he brought up my Commanders, I mean, who had that great, you know, sort of revelatory season last year. And now look where they're – right back where they've been, right? I mean, you can be frustrated by the lack of success in January, but the fact that it's mid-December and the Steelers are always, always, always in it, I mean, that's uncommon. I'm not defending Mike Tomlin as some I'm just stating facts. Like, that is a fact. They are always in it in December under Mike Tomlin, and that is not the case for anybody else. So, you know, it's entertaining, and it's never boring. I'd much rather be covering this than be covering the Chiefs right now, for example.
Yeah, and who would have thought that for the last 11 years, or even going into this year, that it would be like this? When's the last time they had three meaningless games to end a season? That has been a long time for Kansas City.
Right. And the Mike Tomlin meaningless game in his career in 19 years, it's going to be true through this season. It's going to one game in 19 years where they were mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. That, I mean, come on.
Now, that being said, there's more to do.
You know, I mean, absolutely. But I just, you know, the things have sort of broken the way that they wanted. If they win the division, I think they would have preferred to do it while being the top seed with a week off and whatever. If they can win the division, which I still think is maybe 55-45, they pull it off. But, you know, like, they've everything else, like, the Chiefs are having a down year. The Ravens won't get in the playoffs. Like, everything is that they sort of needed to have happen for them, for all the roadblocks that have sort of been in their way, would be, you know, outside of the Bills, would be sort of eliminated. I think they would take their chances if that's how it unfolds.
We're joined by Will Graves from the Associated Press. You probably heard me earlier laud Aaron Rodgers. I've done it a few times tonight. A-plus, all of it, from his relationships to the accountability to all of it. I have been thoroughly stunned by how this has played out after, especially given the couple other quarterbacks that have rolled through here, and how that didn't work for any of them. What are your thoughts on the whole package that Aaron Rodgers has brought to Pittsburgh?
I mean, I think, you know, I agree with you as somebody who was like, oh, man, this is going to be a circus, like when they signed him, when it was finally official, right? Like, that was my big fear. But, you know, to be fair, I think, I think Mike Tomlin isn't lying when he says this guy has a love affair with the game of football and he loves to compete. There have been some times, a couple times this year, I think the Charger game, I think the Buffalo game, where, you know, I saw some Danny Glover, like in Lethal Weapon, I'm getting too old for this, like looks on his face a couple of times. But, you know, there were some, look, there were, and I'm sure that you've seen it making the rounds today. There was some stuff that, you know, the mics caught him and the Dolphins players when he was over near the Miami sideline, kind of like going at, you know, jawing at each other. They're calling him old man. And, you know, I mean, I did a story right around the start of the season, and I spent like maybe the week after they broke camp that next week, every time there was an availability, I would just sit in the room and kind of, I wouldn't really interview people. I'd just sort of watch him. Right. And then I kind of went up and talked to guys afterwards about, I was watching him interact. And I mean, I think he puts on no airs, which I don't think we can say that about every quarterback that's come through that room. I think that's fair to say. And, you know, he is just as happy talking to, you know, a practice squad guy as he is, you know, a 10-year vet. You know, he seems to have the needle out for just about in like a good natured way for just about everybody. And, you know, I had an extended conversation with Mason, this was earlier in the season about it, but he just was sort of, you know, he was curious too on how it was going to go. And he was sort of caught off guard a little bit by how like open Aaron is with just about everything. You know, I mean, he is an open book for all the guys in that room, for all the guys, you know, on the offense with including the offensive staff. He's not, you know, he is playing with house money. I mean, he's going to the Hall of Fame as a Packer, right? This is just, but he has avoided being, you know, you and me are going to sound like, here's where I start sounding like an unk, as my kids call me now. Like, he's avoided the Johnny Unitas in a Charger uniform, Joe Namath playing for the Rams, sort of weird, you know, career coda.
Joe Montana Chiefs.
Willie Mays, you know, sort of stumbling out of the box. Like, he's avoided all of that, right? I mean, he's been, you know, for the most, I mean, he's had some clunkers. But you know what? Like, the most honest thing that he has said, I think he said it after the Baltimore game. I mean, somebody asked him how he's feeling. And he said, look, Jeffy, you and I are in our 50s. It's hard as it is for me to say. You know, he says, some days I wake up you know, and I feel good. And some days I don't. Today I woke up feeling good. And I felt that, right? I mean, I feel that deeply. And look, I think even in his interactions with us, he's been professional. There's certainly some things that he is not going to talk about, whether it's his personal life or maybe some personal interactions with teammates. But he's also used his forum to hold guys accountable to, you know, in a sometimes passive aggressive way that is reminiscent of other guys that have been in that room, but they have responded too. Right.
Yeah.
And that's important.
And Will, I was mentioning, I saw a practice the other day where Roman Wilson did something really well. I can't imagine what's going through Roman's head right now because, you know, obviously Aaron doesn't want him out there. He wanted other people, and I'm not just saying it's Aaron, but he also was congratulating him after a big play and how he made a right read and made a good catch and went over to him was like, so he's not like ostracizing, like that part of Aaron, I wish everybody could see. You saw it a little bit in camp, but there is that leadership quotient that I think a player could come and yell at him and he would take it, but he's also going to give it back.
Yeah. I mean, there's the fire is still there and, you know, his expectations are high, but he, you know, he's sort of walking the walk too, right? With the way that he prepares, the way that he has to prepare to be successful at 42 in the National Football League. I mean, look, I caught a little bit of, and I want to stress, this is not a fair comparison, but like I caught some of Phil Rivers on, you know, on Sunday. And look, Phil, I mean, God bless him for what he's doing. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is not playing like Phil Rivers. I mean, Phil's severely limited. And look, the guy's been out having kids and coaching football for the last 5 years. I mean, Rodgers can still play. Like, I do think it is going to be a week-to-week thing. I do think the consistency, like it was, and I think we all sort of wrote some form of this last night. I certainly did. It was in my lead that it sort of looked like Green Bay and it felt like Green Bay. And he sort of played a little bit like he was in Green Bay. Right. I mean, he did not, to his credit, he's been, I will give him credit too. His assessment of his own play has been sort of sobering, right? Like he is not getting, you know, he's not giving himself the flowers, right? Like he is, you know, he said, look, yeah, I played pretty well, but look, I didn't press the ball down the field. Like, I think if I did that, we could be talking about being in the zone, but I wasn't. I was just sort of making, you know, quick decisions and we were efficient. So look, I don't want to say it's been pleasurable, but it's been sort of normal, right? Like he hasn't said anything that's made everybody run to their keyboards and light up the internet. You know, I think it's helped that he's kept his national television appearances limited.
Yes.
You know, yes. And I'm grateful for that. As is everybody else that covers the team. He's got the rest of his life to kind of go explore that side of things if he wants. But I think he's, you know, I mean, I think the season could have gone one or two ways after the Buffalo game, and to see the response, not just in his play, but in the team's play is, you know, I think that we all were sort of expecting maybe the bottom to fall out, and the fact that it didn't. And I think that first play against the Ravens was sort of that from that Dylan Thomas poem, like he's raging against the dying of the light. Like, I think that's what it was, right? I think it was like, all right, we are not going to sit there and go meekly. And that is in stark contrast certainly to what we saw last year.
Thank you for bringing some culture to this show today. Ben Roethlisberger went into the Hall of Honor along with Joey Porter and Marquise Pouncey. It's awesome to watch those highlights, and you think about some of the plays that Ben made over his career and some of the games that he had. Such a deserve. I mean, there was no doubt he's going to go in the Hall of Honor, no doubt that he's going to go in the Hall of Fame. I want to ask you about a question you asked him. He now has a podcast. We remember in covering him how he would be incensed when Terry Bradshaw would say anything about things that were going on with the team. And he made it a point to say that players can critique players basically because they played the game, but that he doesn't critique players necessarily. He critiques plays. What do you think of him being a pseudo, he's not a media person, but a podcaster?
You know, I'd be lying if I said I'm a regular listener to his podcast. I mostly hope to make sure he doesn't say something that makes headlines like he did a couple weeks ago when he wasn't the only one. Let's remember James Harrison, Ryan Clark, all the sort of usual suspects sort of piping up to saying that maybe it's time for Mike T to get on down the road. But, you know, I mean, it's to bring some more culture into the song. There's a line in an old Drake song about rappers and athletes, and like, it's like we want to be them and they want to be us. And I think that's sort of ironic now, right? That like Ben and these guys that had their issues with us through the years now want to be part of, you know, the media elite, for lack of, you know, you and I certainly elite. look, he's earned the right to say what he wants. He is a Hall of Famer, no doubt. And look, I got here in 2011. I covered in the last 10 years of his career. You know, the first assignment I had in Pittsburgh covering the Steelers was literally covering his wedding and standing outside that across the street at the church up in the North Hills. And it was a very strange day. I remember very vividly, when I walked back to my car, there were some Steeler fans in a RAV4, and they had those little beads you used to have on your seat, you know, like for older people to make the more comfortable in your car. Like there were black and yellow beaded seats. One of them was wearing a Paul Amalu jersey, and they told me about how, like, this did not make it into my story because I work for the AP, but I can say it now since we're 14 years removed and he's got a family and what by all parts appears to be a happy marriage. The people told me that they felt it was an arranged marriage set up by the Rooneys to repair Ben's reputation. Like, and they were serious. This was not a put on. And I'm sitting there like, it's my first. You know, I've been in town for like a month. It's my first like Steelers thing. And I'm like, what is going on here? Right. But I got here after all of this stuff, right. I got here after Georgia. I got here after the motorcycle accident and all that stuff. And I saw him sort of mature into sort of a man off of the field. Look, he's a competitive guy. He was not always touchy feely with us, and that's fine. Like he would, you know, he could have tantrums, but that's not the right word. But he could get testy, and you know what? That's fine. Like, that's the business. But he also, like there was no, at least in my experiences with him, there was no carryover, right? Like, if I asked him a tough question 1 week, the next week he'd give me a bad answer. The next week I'd ask him a different question, he'd give me a different answer, right? He's matured, you know, and he certainly is comfortable in his skin in sort of speaking his mind, and he's earned the right. But I also think, you know, that he's going to find that, you know, he's still like, what did I do last night that, you know, that didn't happen with Spence on the podcast, right? Like, press him on something, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Like, this, he's a smart guy. He's going to the Hall of Fame. And you know, it is interesting. Like, what he said made headlines, but I think, you know, then 2 weeks later, they win a couple games, and then he says what? In process of answering my question, when I asked him, you know, what's it like to critique a team that you're so closely aligned with? That's how I phrased it. And he said, in part of his answer, he goes, well, you know, look, I think, you know, if Mike Teague could coach for another 10 years, then that's fine, which is like the exact opposite of what he said on his podcast, you know, that it might be time for a clean house and maybe it might be time for Mike to make a fresh start. And he did say yes on Mike's terms and all that stuff's the same, but it's like the urgency that he said it with on the podcast versus where he said it last night was very different. And that's the state, you know, and that's the funniest part. We're talking about Aaron. What has Aaron talked about repeatedly this season? Let's not ride the roller coaster, right? And you and I have been covering this team a long time now. And, you know, we are sort of used to the ebbs and flows of the season, but this one seems like it hasn't been dramatic off the field. It's the on the field. You know, there's no Pickens, there's no ADs, there's no Claypools, there's no Debos, there's none of that stuff, right? It's almost all limited to what's happening on the field, because what's happening on the field is like you do not know what you're going to get on a week-to-week basis. And, you know, I will give Aaron credit. Like, he has ridden the roller coaster. He has sort of hung in there. He has not lost his, you know, the teammates. He has not sort of picked fights with anybody. He has been professional. And, you know, 2 weeks later, and look, I mean, Ben is part of the media. Like, Mike Tomlin needs to go. And 2 weeks later, it's like, oh, well, maybe everything's fine. That's what it's like to be in the media. Like, you know, whereas as a player, he would have been like, oh, we're going to hang in there, we're going to be fine. And now he's finding that when he's on the other side of it, it's a little bit more of a reactionary situation as opposed to being in it. So, you know, I don't know. I guess this means I'm not going to be invited to the podcast anytime soon, but, like, that's okay.
Only Pomp does. Will Graves from the Associated Press is joining us here on 93.7 The Fan. Sidney Crosby has an assist tonight. Pens trail 4-2 after 2 to the Oilers. He is a point away from Mario Lemieux. As someone, Will, much like myself, I know you also loved Mario Lemieux as a kid.
love as a kid who grew up in the D.C. suburbs, and I think I mentioned before, having my springs ruined by the guy in 66 in black and gold many, many times in the 80s and 90s. You know, I mean, like... Mario is it's like the Sid could finish with 3,000 points, and it's still like, and Sid understands this better than anybody, right? Like, Mario is still Mario. There is nothing that Sid is going to accomplish if he gets his name above Mario's name in the Pens record book or the NHL record book in anything that is going to diminish by any speck Mario Lemieux's, you know, the specter of Mario Lemieux. Like, there's nothing that Sid's going to do that will minimize what Mario did. Nothing.
Well, the good thing for the Penguins today is that they're going into the third trailing, so they've got a chance to win this one.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I think they've played above everybody's expectations. I think, you know.
Agreed.
And it's funny, like, what, you know, the you know, we could sit there, like, it's funny when our business, Jeff, and especially you and I who cover lots of different teams as opposed to just one, right? You know, we could sit there, the same reasons that the Penguins decided it was time to move on from Sully is the exact same reasons the Steelers could say it's time to move on from Mike T. And, you know, when we talk about Mike Tomlin, we're like, well, are we sure they're going to get the next guy? And maybe he's going to be successful. And look, I'm not saying he's Mike Sullivan. But I think it's gone far better than anybody expected, right? And, you know, and that's sometimes because, like, sometimes a fresh voice helps. Sometimes a fresh start does help. And Ben is right. Like, sometimes it is better to start over. And, you know, the veterans have responded to him. The younger guys have responded to him. If they lose tonight and they got to do something in the next 20 minutes, or it's going to be a winless 5-game homestand, which is their longest of the season, in which they had multiple goal leads in the third period of 3 of those games. That's going to be blunt a little bit of the optimism. I mean, look, Kyle Dubas last week saying, look, I think there's more there. I think he's right. But look, Gino's hurt, and the goaltending hasn't been great. I think if they miss the playoffs by 2-3 points when we get to mid-April, they play 82 of these things, but when you have the stretch they've had in the last 10 days or so where you're leaving 4 points on the table, I think a lot of people's minds are going to kind of drift back to that stretch and say, well, that, man, if we could just finish a couple of those out, we'd be playing in the playoffs.
Well, the Pirates are dipping their toe in the water of pools that they haven't been in, reportedly, for a while. But they haven't done anything.
They're staring at the water. I mean, are they kind of still staring at the water?
Well, they made an offer, so that's dipping. It's not diving. It's dipping. but they added the password, which is one of the great nicknames of all time, in a trade with Boston, which I think is a good roll of the dice. Do you think, though, that the pressure is enough on Ben Cherington that he has to come away with something more significant than what they've added to this point, and they will indeed do that before spring training starts?
I mean, I was talking to somebody about this today, actually. I think if they really wanted to show people that they were serious, they would try to find a way. They would go to Paul Skenes and say, can we come to some sort of agreement to buy out your first 2 years of arbitration so that we have you for the next, 3-ish years under contract, we know with a fixed cost that we know in advance, and maybe they sign Connor Griffin to some sort of deal. That would show the guys that they want to come here, that the established players that they want to come here, that they're serious about this. I mean, that is, let's remember, in 2012, the deal that Kutch signed was sort of the real, hey, we're kind of serious. We got a really good player here, and we want to feature him, and we want to put some pieces around him, and they were able to do that. I mean, that was a really important message signing. And I think what they're finding is on the open market, look, they've been thrifty for a while. I think that's a polite way to say it, right? And I don't blame a veteran player for – who's looking to get paid a decent wage to be skeptical that it's sustainable, right? Like, I think they're finding out that their reputation, look, I think they have a reputation of when you're in the organization of treating the players fairly well. I do believe that. But, if you're a veteran guy and you want to go win, can you trust this organization to make the moves necessary? I think finding a number that Paul would agree to that would keep him here for sure through, like, say, 28, right? I think that would send a message. That would get guys' attentions more than having Paul text some of his buddies and be like, hey, you want to come play for the Pirates, right? I think that would be a more altruistic sign of we are serious about this. And, short of that, which, look, I don't think that's going to happen, I'm just sort of, how willing are they going to be to part with their assets to get a player of note? And they do have a surplus of young pitching, but, I think it's going to be difficult for them. Look, it sucks because I think with this rotation has the potential to be really, really good. They don't need to sign like 4 guys that are going to hit 350 with 30 homers, right? They could get 2 guys. Get one guy that can hit, 2-way, that can be like sort of like a Brian Reynolds type, and then get one guy that can hit the ball over the fence 30 to 40 times a year. And I think that would be enough to put them. I mean, look at the division. Who knows what the Cardinals are doing? The Brewers are good, but they seem to be like they might be gettable. And, the Cubs haven't done much yet, right? So, there's a chance for them to sort of, do something here the next couple of years. But I just wonder if they're going to find the right players and have the right things happen. Let's remember, too, part of the one of the reasons that they had that renaissance, yes, they signed Kutch, but they also got Burnett basically at a discount, right? Because
right.
he picked up a big chunk of the salary. The same, you know, they got Russ Martin in a similar type situation. They got luck, you know, Liriano, let's remember,
so,
Liriano fell in his shower, right? And, like, they got him on it. They got him a deal on him in that first year.
Right. Well, so, and I think with Liriano, what was key about Liriano is they overpaid what most other teams were willing to. They took a chance there and paid more than other teams were, and it paid off huge for them. And I think that's what they have to do here. They're going to have to take a chance on and overpay to where other people in the market are like, wait, what? The Pirates are spending what?
Right. I know. I bring this up a lot, but I think it's a pretty apt comparison considering where the franchises are at. The Nats, going into 2011, had Strasburg in the rotation, and Harper was they just drafted Harper, and they went out and they signed Jason. They had Ryan Zimmerman at third base, and they went out and they signed Jason Worth to like a 7-year, $120 million contract, which is a huge overpay for them. And they had that stadium was new. Was still pretty new, and they were not filling it, right? And then what happened? They sustained it. They continued to spend money, and they continued to bring in players, and they spent the next 10 years in contention and finished it off with the World Series in 2019.
Well,
you know, and they started with that Worth acquisition was huge to that part of the franchise development. I think that's where the Pirates are at, and they probably, if they really want to make a splash, they want to be a contender, they have to make a splash and get uncomfortable doing it.
And last one here for Will Graves from the Associated Press. You've covered a number of Olympics, not necessarily winter as much as summer. There is anxiety, apprehension of the NHL, maybe some players as well, about the facilities not being done. Is it that unusual at a couple of months out for things still not to be where they used to be, considering all that goes into putting on an Olympic Games?
Yeah. I mean, look, this is sort of par for the course. Actually, I was on the phone with my boss today. I'll be going over there for a couple weeks. I won't be doing the hockey. I'll be over in Cortina doing a lot of skiing because, you know, I'm a big skiing guy. But I mean, look, in Rio, for example, in 2016, I mean, I remember in the Olympic Park where most of the venues were for gymnastics, swimming, tennis, whatever, they had like sort of like bricks, not the pirate bricks, but sort of like the pirate bricks in the walkway. In the promenade there, and they weren't like they had not been put in cement, like they were moving underneath our feet as we walked. Okay. And yet everything sort of kind of came off fine. I think that, you know, and I this will be my ninth Olympics, and I can say this because of my experience, there's always anxiety. There's always, is it gonna, you know, oh, man, I don't know about this, I don't know about that. And then you get there, and as my good friend Eddie Pels, a longtime colleague here at the AP, calls it turns into Olympic land where everybody sort of gets in the spirit, and for a couple weeks, they pull it off, right? There have been issues with just about all the Olympics I've covered, and yet they sort of, you know, they happen, and for those couple of weeks, everything is fine. Now, let's be honest. I mean, you could, you know, y'all get bored tonight, go, you know, on the Google machine and type in what the Rio venues look like now. I mean, like literally the second we left town, they started eroding. Olympic Park is like a ghost town. A lot of the buildings there that some of them were temporary structures, not all of them have kind of gone to pot. You know, like it was the same way in Sochi in 2014. That's just kind of how it goes. You know, I think the Olympics we're finding like this one will be different because it's so spread out. I think we're going to find out at the LA Olympics, which is going to be different. I mean, they're going to be doing softball in like Oklahoma City, for example, right? Like I think these countries, the IOC is starting to understand, and the host countries, even more importantly, are starting to understand like we cannot be spending, you know, $10, $15 billion on this thing. We can't, right? So we got to do it. We got to do it more efficiently. We got to not, you know, I mean, Jeff, I was in Rio and they had spent a ton of money on a subway line that was designed to go from like the rich part of Rio to sort of where the Olympic Park was. They never finished it. And then when the games were over, they abandoned the project. It was still like it was like 2 miles of track that never got laid. Right. I mean, I think that the world is starting under like these countries just starting to understand, like, it's just not worth it. So what I think we're going to see maybe not in our lifetimes, but I would imagine by the, like, my kids are 17 and 15, by the time they're my age, the Olympics, if they still exist, which they should, because I do think it is a very unique event, still probably my favorite thing to do, just because it's such a, the athletes there are so different than what you and I deal with sort of on a daily basis. You know, there'll be some sort of rotation, you know, there will be with sustainable venues, and it'll be like LA, Tokyo, Paris, London, place in Australia, you know, a place in China, you know, maybe a place in France for the Winter Olympics, maybe one in Norway, one in Canada, and like they will just sort of rotate. Like that to me is sort of where we're going with this thing. But, you know, I think the NHL players have every right to be skeptical, but I imagine once they get there and they put on their sweaters with their country's symbol on them, and then it's like, oh yeah, right, I remember why I'm doing this, and everything's going to be fine.
Will Graves from the Associated Press, thank you so much for your time late night. Here after a late night last night. Thanks, Will.
You're the best. All right, I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, Will Graves from the Associated Press joining us here on 93.7 The Fan. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Let's hear what Ben Roethlisberger had to say before being honored, and we'll get your reactions, 412-928-9370. Then I want to get into a couple of pit things as – Joel will update you on the hockey game, but there's a pretty huge game that's coming up for Pitt on Thursday. It's not a mainstream sport. Will you get into it? Will you be tuning in? Will it be a priority watch for you with a Pittsburgh team for a chance to win a national championship? All of that straight ahead here on a Tuesday evening on 93.7 The Fan.